Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to Rule the Roost Podcast. I'm your host, Tatrunk, and I'm joined this week by the returning man, the returning legend, that is Mr. Raj Baines. How you doing, Raj?
I know several people that would disagree with that introduction, but I'm very well, thank you.
We don't want to listen to their opinions, mate.
They'd probably say the same for me. I had a really good time, really good a couple of weeks off.
Where did you go?
Guantanamo Bay, if I'm listening to the podcast, according to you and Seb. I was in Orlando, Florida, going to all the parks. Not SeaWorld, obviously, fuck SeaWorld. Disneyland and what's the tough one called? Universal Studios. Yeah, we did all that sort of business and went to some shopping centres and whatnot and just had a couple of weeks off as a family. So it was it's very pleasant. I was very happy to go before, you know, Trump gets in and I'm not allowed through the border anymore. But it was not as entirely enjoyable. Went to an MLS match as well, which was an experience. But not happy to be back, happy to be doing this again. I got a little bit of FOMO listening to the podcast between you two. Especially when you said towards the end of the last one, tried to make a reference about Dexter and it went straight over Seb's head. I felt my heart broke a little bit.
Did you hear when he asked me if I meant Dexter's laboratory?
Yeah.
You know, it's what I had to work with.
I'm impressed of him knowing Dexter's lab because was that still on when you two were kids? Because I know it was big when I was a kid.
I reckon so. Probably just like tail end. So I reckon it probably hit television when I was probably about 11, 12, I guess, maybe.
Seb was definitely man dark when he was a kid, if we're being honest. But I'm very happy to be home. I get a bit homesick if I'm away from Yorkshire for more than a fortnight. I know it sounds a bit pathetic and a little bit Brexit, but no,
sound a little bit Brexit.
It's just the weather and stuff. I get a little, because you know how particular I am on sort of stuff like that. I just get a bit antsy to come home after a couple of weeks. I do very much enjoy going on holiday. It's just coming home is probably my favourite part, especially when it's cold.
You're seriously joining old miserable old bastard club already, mate.
I've always been like this my entire life. That is
genuinely one of my peak, like one of my dad's peak phrases. Like, the best bit about an holiday is coming home.
But at the end of the day, when you're on holiday, you want an easy life, don't you?
Yeah, your mind's on especially when you're going on holiday to America, your mind's on the chips already, isn't it, really? Refillable fries. Yes, mate, I'm in on that.
They've got bottomless drinks and bought a massive tub of ice cream that took me a fortnight to finish and all sorts. My biggest guilty pleasure was we had the TV because we stayed in a villa, so it wasn't as if we had basic TV, we had proper TV with everything on. So I'd spend all night watching just channels and shit that we don't get here. So, and like most evenings, once everyone else had gone to bed, I'd be up until like 1 and 2 watching Hardwood Classics on the NBA channel and stuff like that.
It's overwhelming. That's what I always find about America whenever I go there. It's just like, it's just a big sea of dopamine, isn't it? You know, like everything there is just geared towards just making you smile on a kind of artificial level in a way. I know that sounds quite cynical, but it's there's lots
especially
of very nice things
like
in America as well. Don't get me wrong, American listeners. I'm not saying it in a nasty way. I just mean that there's as a British person, when you're coming from a land where there's like heavily regulated tiny little bags of crisps or chips, as you would call them, and then you walk in and you can pretty much buy a bag that's half the size of your person it can be overwhelming, but not a bad thing.
Yeah, there's all sorts of things like we went to Starbucks one day just because that was the only coffee shop in this mall thing we went to. Their biggest cup's like three times the size of our biggest cup. And there's just, because as you say, because there are rules and regulations about how big and shit you can make stuff here, they don't exist there. So they've just got outrageously large amounts of things, which is hilarious.
Drink up that freedom, mate. Drink up that freedom.
I actually did because I bought a case of Budweiser while I was there for the Villa, and they've got the bloody national anthem on front. It says America, land of the free, home of the brave, and they've printed like the first few bars of the Star Spangled Banner on the bottle.
It's one of those things that, like, I'd love to take the piss out of, but then, like, we do have certain products that are, like, stamped with the Queen's seal of approval and stuff on them, don't we? So we kind of, you know, we're not that much better on that respect, are we, I guess? No.
Everyone's got their own bit of national pride. So there's nothing wrong with national pride to an extent, but it's just keeping yourself checks and balances into
it. Yeah, yeah. Right, fuck all that anyway. Fuck nationalism. Fuck it. Fuck nationalism.
Yeah, I'm back. That's the main point. You and Seb can be saved from wallowing in each other's misery. I think he's needed a week off after having 2 weeks of you straight. He's just gone to sort of hide and recover.
I don't know. I think he's done himself a mischief. All these trips to London, he's tired himself out. But we played Liverpool on the weekend. Did you get a chance to catch much of it, mate?
I did. I woke up. It was the day I flew, so we didn't have to leave until sort of 10, 11, and it kicked off at 7:30 in the morning. So I got up for that and watched it on NBC Sports.
I wasn't too impressed. I wasn't impressed with the performance. I think, like, just to clarify, to me, a performance like that and that game in particular is a reason why Liverpool won't win the league. That was Liverpool to a T. Like, I feel that Spurs were there for the taking. I feel that Liverpool brought a much better game to the occasion, if you like, and yet they still couldn't beat us, even though we were, as you know, what I would say we've seen off Spurs, we were pretty terrible, and Liverpool were all right, but they couldn't break us down really. I was concerned by a good few performances, especially in the attacking third from our team, namely Kane, who, you know, I think if we're going to call out other players, I think it's Harry deserves to be called out when he deserves it. And Kane was awful. He was absolutely appalling. Eriksen was appalling. Lamella was pretty poor. Ali was, I don't know, it's split opinion. I don't think Ali was. I think Ali grew into the game. But he wasn't at his best still. It just seemed like there was something missing. I think the main thing I thought about the game, mate, as I was watching it, is that it that kind of same verve, that same pressing, that same kind of determination that seemed to be like a hallmark of our season last year was just not there. It didn't seem like anyone was working for one another. No one was really kind of moving into that space, providing options, looking for, like, the, you know, the extra pass or... I don't know. It wasn't there for me. It was disjointed. I don't really want to buy into conspiracy theories about people not being paid enough or so on and so forth. But it still wasn't particularly encouraging, I didn't feel. What did you make of it?
It was the first 90 minutes I got to watch all year, I think. And obviously that start wasn't great. The first half was fairly terrible. And you're right to point to the players that you do point to. One of the things that I wasn't as enamoured with as others appear to have been is this relationship between Janssen and Kane. Because Kyle Walker went off because he's got a tummy bug or something. Which, you know, 15 minutes into a game, you wonder why did he start if he's going to have to be hauled off to take a shit 10 minutes in. But... you know, then it happened, I guess. But we made the shift then to put Dyer at right back and bring Janssen on top. And we did good things about it happening late on in Everton. And then they obviously started together against Palace. We won that game, but it, you know, perhaps it wasn't due to that partnership working. I'm not entirely sure. I didn't see the game, but seeing it for the first time in person, I know it sounds very basic, and it's probably something that people say on Twitter that maybe we'd laugh at because it is so basic, but if you've got a lad who's your top scorer for the past two seasons, the Premier League's top scorer last year, why move him? If it ain't broke, don't try and fix it, essentially. I understand the thinking behind it. I appreciate sort of what Pochettino sees in both players, and I have been really impressed with the work rate and sort of Janssen's ability off the ball and to get into position and use his giant arse to bounce people out of the way while he's on it. He almost reminds me of a prop forward when he gets ball because his back's facing the wrong way every time. I don't think I've ever seen him collect a pass and run onto it to go forwards. He's constantly taking a touch and turning his back to goal. It seems like his default setting. But I understand why that happens late on into a game. If we're chasing it, obviously bring on a second striker and somebody else to put the ball into the back of the net. It makes perfect sense. But I don't want that to be our plan here, especially with, I'm sure we'll get onto this, but last season, one of our biggest worries was if anything happens to Harry Kane, then we've got no cover. So if this season we start playing Harry Kane together with another striker, we still have no cover because they're both on the pitch at the same time. We're not resting Harry Kane. He's not feeling any benefit of the other striker being there because he's playing at the same time with him. It's got to be one or the other for me personally, because I think it makes far more sense. Harry Kane has obviously got the ability and the class to play anywhere across that front four, ideally in one of the central roles, but he's still the best striker we've got at the club, so I'd like him to please be playing up front as the striker if possible.
It is an interesting one, isn't it? I've been very encouraged by Janssen so far. I think
I'm away from him.
I know you're not having a knock at him. I've been very encouraged by his performances so far. I think one thing I will notice, and this is no criticism of the lad, it's quite obvious that he's not up to the Pochettino level of fitness yet. I anticipate that next season he'll be a lot trimmer. I think he'll be a lot fitter, and I think he'll seemingly have a lot more energy. Energy is probably the wrong term, because he does run around a lot. He does put it about, and that's what I really like about him. He seems to have really bought into the kind of the Spurs thing, I guess, the harrying, the pressing. He gets stuck in right. But I do agree with you, and I think for all the plaudits that Kane rightly deserves, you know, I absolutely love the lad, and I'm not being knee jerk. I'm not laying into him off of the back of a poor performance. It's more just an ongoing thing that I think a lot of people have noticed, is that when things don't go well for Kane in a game, when he starts to kind of, I guess, panic a bit, his default setting seems to always be to drop back, which is always, I find, quite counterproductive. When you need him further up the pitch, when you need him to kind of get you a goal, to be someone on the end of a Lamella pass or so on and so forth, you often find that he's the guy that's dropped back and started the move that, you know, will ultimately come to nothing because there's no one up there to play it into. And I don't know if this is some kind of move in that respect to kind of, you know, just let him build up his confidence again a bit. I think maybe, you know, it's speculation, obviously, but for all we know, the Euros experience has kind of maybe knocked his confidence a bit. Pochettino's trying to manage that. But I definitely agree with you. I think, you know, we've seen what Kane can do. He is an established Premier League striker now. He's one of the best strikers in the Premier League. I don't think we need to caveat that at all anymore. Probably one of the best strikers in Europe, to be honest. And I agree with you that by dropping him back, I don't buy. I know a lot of people say, "Oh, you know, he made his bones as a kind of number 10." I just don't buy that anymore. The guy's a striker for me, you know. And I agree with you. We should just stick him up front. I'm just never that fond of seeing him drop back. I think if we're really that concerned about our kind of options in that, you know, that whatever, what would you call it? Is it the second band of attack? I don't know. Whatever term it is, that band of attack behind the front man, I'd rather see someone like, you know, Marcus Edwards get pulled up now, which probably seems like he's on the verge of, of getting. I think there's a bit of a power play going on between him and Pochettino there. Pochettino letting him know who's boss, but ultimately, I think we're going to see Marcus Edwards deployed. Do you know what, mate? It's base, right? It's very, very base. But I think the most glaringly obvious thing about that performance against Liverpool essentially was that we are lacking pace. We really are lacking. I think we're desperate for some pace. I don't think it's going to be like this is a catastrophe if we don't add pace to our squad, that, you know, we're going to somehow completely disappear and this is the end of the Pochettino project. But I'm talking about if we want to kick on, if we want to stay competitive, if we want to, you know, try and match the heroics, if you like, of last year, I do think we need that extra dimension, because I feel that teams are probably going to start to wise up to the way we play. I mean, like, we've looked a shell of our side last year without Dembele, for example.
I think these slow starts have been happening under Pochettino, though, don't it? Almost as if it keeps happening, maybe it is just a case that this style of football and this squad maybe just need a bit of a run up. I mean, you mentioned Kane's poor start. He's never scored in August before.
It's isn't it?
Obviously, the season before last, he wasn't really in the squad at that point. But the season after, when obviously the whole one season wonder thing came out, and we sort of bit everyone that had bought into it into the backside, he was a slow starter. And maybe this is just something that's indicative of how he gets going. He needs a bit of a run up at it. I mean, it's a flaw, but it's one that you can live with. If you know that it's going to happen, you can almost go, okay, he can't find his form straight away. He needs to get his eye in. But once he does, we're up and away. There are some players that just need to play themselves into form. And it happens enough across the board and enough in most sports that you can't isolate him and blame him too much for it, because to play at that high of a level, then maybe you do need to sort of ease yourself into it. You can't really be expected to be going from 0 to 100 in one game every time. But, you know, maybe that's been me being too easy on him. I'm not sure.
I think around the, and don't laugh, but around the 69-minute mark, I was sat there, I was watching it. I felt that, I totally get that he was limited, so on and so forth. But it was around that point of the game, the game was kind of stagnating a bit. Liverpool looked like, they kind of looked shot for ideas, and we kind of looked like we were just not really going to break through.
That was a pleasing aspect of it. I mean, you touched on it before, but it was, if we were to sort of switch perspectives and almost look at that from a Liverpool point of view, then they've got a very good record against us in the past few seasons, and the fact that they played really well, and, you know, when they played that same level against Arsenal, for example, they scored 4 goals, but against us they only managed to get the one from a penalty. It wasn't as if they broke us down in open play, and they couldn't build on that. They couldn't beat us. No. It was almost some things that used to happen to us when, you know, sort of Martin Yoli era time, we would often go to these bigger sides and play very well and give a good account of ourselves. But, you know, you can count on one hand the amount of times we've won, just because we didn't have that next gear to do. And it was always frustrating to come away from, you know, Old Trafford or Stamford Bridge with a draw rather than the win that maybe we deserved. And to be on the other side of that is an interesting turn in fortunes.
It is. I would like to see us kind of start to turn that corner where we can be the team that capitalises on those performances. And I kind of feel that was what was missing at times last year, and I think that's where we need to kick on. I think it's great. I definitely agree with you, and, you know, I'm not going to criticise the team for not losing to a handy Liverpool side, because they are. But I would like to see us start to capitalise. And we did it a few times last year. That City stands out for me. City away stands out as a particular time in which we did capitalise, and against a few of the smaller teams. But I was going to say, though, I would have liked to have seen a player like Townsend come on, even though he's limited. It's that pace, it's the directness that I feel can free up some more of our players, like Kane, like Janssen, in the centre. It'll draw people away. And, you know, if we'll talk more about transfers or alleged transfers in the second half, but, you know, someone like Zaha, for example, you know, perhaps that's what they can provide. Who knows? I feel like we're going to have an interesting conversation about that one, mate, from your reaction there. one quick shout out I wanted to give as well was to Josh Onuma, because again, he's someone that's very much, I don't know, divided opinion, I guess. I thought his cameo was pretty decent, personally. I thought, considering he'd only had, well, I think he came on for the last 10 minutes, I think he carried the ball very well. I think he was always looking to play it forwards. I think he was pretty direct in everything that he was doing. I think there's a decent player there. I think, and yeah, it looks like he's gonna be featured. I mean, a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, he's a bit Bambi on ice and so on and so forth. But yeah, he's a young lad still, you know, and I think it's something he's gonna learn. But to me, the signs are encouraging, and he is gonna be someone I think we're gonna see a lot more of this year. And I likened him to, afterwards on Twitter, I called him a baby Dembele, because that's kind of what I could see him doing. He had that sort of air about him. I think we tried to play him on the wing a bit, but I'm not 100% that's his position. He seems to be quite hard to tackle.
Doesn't he play centre mid for the England youth?
I believe so, yeah. And I think he's got a good range of passing as well. I think he reads the game pretty well. I think he's very much in the same way that you would probably say about Dembele, is that their effect is almost quite understated in a way, because Dembele, you know, he's not always popping up with assists, he's not always popping up with goals. So in that kind of raw statistical kind of look, you think, you know, whatever. But when you actually watch Dembele, and you watch the team with and without Dembele, you see how important he is to us now. And I'm not by any means saying that that's Josh Onuma yet, but I almost feel that that's kind of what we should be looking to cultivate him into, because I feel, you know, I don't know, I don't want us to set this bar that the only young players that are of any worth are ones that can come on, who have, you know, lightning pace, or can score goals, or can, you know, provide assists, because I just think it's a very narrow view of what makes up a team, you know? And I think Dembele is a prime example of that. I don't know.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I was really encouraged by Josh Onuma. I think he's a good player.
Yeah, I agree. He had that strange Onuma role almost last season, where he would be brought on late into game, similarly as he was done on the weekend. So I'd like him to have that role maybe expanded a little bit in the early rounds at the Carling Cup. What have we got, Gillingham at home?
I think so, yes.
If that's not an invitation, no disrespect to Gillingham, maybe, I don't really care. but yeah.
Sorry, any listeners in Gillingham.
Yeah, apologies. If that's not an invitation to start the likes of Onuma and Marcus Edwards and whatnot, then I'm not sure what is.
I agree. Right, we're going to have a small break now. We are approaching transfer deadline day, and as you know, it's a time where people get pretty hysterical, pretty excited.
Will this podcast actually come out on transfer deadline day?
It might do, yeah, or, well, slightly just before, so, you know, you'll probably all be melting down now. And
it's the 30th today, right?
Yeah, so it will be.
Yeah,
well, there you go, it will come out.
I thought I was going mad. I genuinely thought I was going mad until, no, I was right and you were wrong. I just wanted to make sure people know.
As per usual. But yeah, you'll no doubt will be melting down and having a go at the pretty worthy target of the Tottenham Hotspur Supporters Trust, because
as we know who really are the people behind all the transfers that we make.
That's it. So what we're going to do now is speak to Kat and to Martin from the Tottenham Hotspur Supporters Trust, where they can basically try and make some excuses as to why they're, you know, not to blame for our shambolic transfer window.
Right, welcome back to Rule the Roost podcast, Katrina Law and Martin Cloak. I'm not sure, you haven't been on before, have you, Martin?
I haven't, no. First time, so hello, everybody.
Which is amazing, because he's a complete podcast tart, so...
That's probably the best introduction we've ever had, really. And that will never be forgotten.
Thanks.
You're both in surprisingly good spirits, considering I actually reneged on my promise of bringing biscuits, which...
We were going to call this off, obviously, because, you know, no biscuits, no party, basically.
We were discussing last night, actually, having a Trust Biscuit of the Month. I think we're going to take in nominations, maybe, and do that in our monthly newsletter. So I'm pushing hard for chocolate digestives for September.
You can do a Twitter poll and everything.
Could do.
As well.
If you... Could do. Our favourite platform, Twitter.
Yeah. But you don't want your opinion of all that. No. Of all that lot, you know.
Right. Your chocolate digesters do not represent me.
Yeah. So it is. It's transfer deadline day.
It is.
This is usually a time that we see a lot of vitriol come your way. Have you had much so far?
Not much this year. I think possibly the message has got across. I mean, we'll see what happens tomorrow. Transfer deadline day is still live at the moment, and Sky's still making a big thing of it as well. So things could be unfolding, and they might not be. But I think the tricky thing with this is that it's fairly obvious that if you're a football fan, the thing you think is most important, and the thing you're most interested in is what happens on the pitch. So of course, people are going to be interested in who we're signing, the squad strength, and whatever. But as a trust, we don't really do on field. And I think it's certainly the view of the board and seems to be most of our members, that that's the way it should be. We deal with things that directly affect the fans, like ticketing, travel and, you know, representation and all the rest of it. But actually, there are professionals at the club that are there to sign players or whatever. And actually, you know, you could take any group of five Tottenham fans and they'll all have five different opinions about who we should sign, whatever goes on. I think possibly what our job is to do is that if there is a concern about whether the club are not showing enough ambition, we're not strengthening the squad, and we'll see what happens after today, with tomorrow on that, then that's something we would say, well, that's the feeling of the fans, and we would push the club for an explanation. Part of the problem with any explanation they give is that if people have decided that they don't believe what they're saying, or they should have spent more money and that's it, then it's not really going to change their mind as well. And I think that's where we've kind of been involved in arguments before. People said, well, what are you going to do about it? And we said, well, actually, on that, there's not a huge amount we can do about it. All we can do is ask the club to explain as fully as possible. But then, you know, we did push a couple of years ago when there was a feeling that there hadn't been a bit of ambition showing. And a few people said, well, you know, you made yourself look a bit silly by asking that, because what are the club going to tell you? Actually, we're not going to get the inside deal on, you know, what wages so-and-so asked for, what cut the agent was going to take or whatever. So it's a little bit of a bouncing act. Of course, it's something that the fans are interested in, so we need to be able to make sure they're getting information. But any more than that, you know, we certainly don't have any influence, and arguably nor should we.
Do you think there's potentially a misconception whereby people feel that the club would for some reason operate on a maximum clarity basis with you guys? Like, so, I mean, I'm assuming that the club, with matters such as transfers, so on and so forth, they're still very conscious of the fact that you guys are a mouthpiece of the fans, if you like. And thus, they're not going to, you know, divulge everything to you. And I feel that maybe, perhaps sometimes, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think every aspect of work that we as a trust cover is about us being able to input into some genuine consultation. So there being a reason for us involved in those discussions, because there's something constructive that we can bring to the table. And as Martin's just alluded to, in a transfer situation, there is not really that much constructive we can bring to the table. So they don't talk to us at all about the transfer window, and we don't ask any questions about the transfer window. Having said that, I was on the phone to a senior member of staff earlier this afternoon, and the official club line as of about 5 o'clock was, Maurizio wanted a striker, a midfielder and a winger, and by the end of today he will have all three, as we probably now know.
Wanyama, Janssen and...
Yay!
Kodu.
There you go. But that's as much as we get, and I wouldn't ask. I think it completely undermines our position, you know, as trust representatives, if we're going to be picking up the phone to members of the board and asking them for insights, you know, ITK on transfer rumours. It's not what we do.
Yes,
so we need to make sure that we stay credible and we limit ourselves to the stuff that we can actually have a positive effect on.
Football's a bit odd like that because, you know, the sort of whether people are going to tell you the true story or not is well, what people are going to decide they believe. And I was reminded of it again the other day when, in the run-up to the Liverpool game, Klopp had said Coutinho's injured. And he obviously wasn't. And that's a clever bit of management, that, isn't it? Because you kind of lull the opposition to a false sense of security by saying one of your players is injured and then you play them. But then I seem to remember when Hoddle did that, when he was the England manager, a large section of the press said that made him a total git because he was telling lies. And I always thought, well, why are you going to tell the opposition what your team's going to be in advance? You know, but it wasn't the right thing. So you had an example there of people deciding, for whatever reasons, and there's a whole complicated story around that, Hoddle was a git. So therefore, anything he does makes him a git. There are people that think that the people that run our club are a bunch of tight gits that haven't really got any ambition. There are other people that take a more measured approach. And there are other people still that think everything they do is brilliant. And probably most of those people aren't going to have their mind changed unless we sign the entire kind of Real Madrid team and then got Barcelona as a reserve team. And even then, there'd probably be a bit of an issue, you know, because they hadn't signed enough English players or something. So, you know, people kind of have made up their mind in advance, really, haven't they, a lot of the time?
It's almost like people are just awful in general, isn't it, guys? I don't know.
Can it possibly comment?
It's me.
You make it sound like some kind of sociopath or something.
Yeah. So obviously you guys, you're not responsible for players that we may or may not buy, but...
Only the good ones.
Well, yeah. That's a
success story, isn't it?
Yeah. So the players that we sold, so you're taking responsibility for that one then? Right, and
I'm not going this far. I've dug myself in here, haven't I?
Yeah. But in terms of the stuff that the Trust do have control over, a lot of it is we're seeing it manifest at Wembley at the moment, or is going to be at Wembley.
Yeah, so Wembley is going to be an interesting experience for club and players and fans alike. We've now got about 2 weeks lead time into the Monaco game, and that's going to be our first experience of playing a home match at Wembley Stadium. Now, I think it's beyond a stretch of imagination to think you're going to walk in there and it's going to feel like White Hart Lane, because it isn't. It's almost three times the size. So it's 90,000 capacity as opposed to 36,000. So much, much, much bigger. It's obviously red, which is a big issue, because as much as the club would love to replace all the 90,000 seats, that isn't possible. So we've got to try and counteract that as well. So it's going to feel very differently for size and look. The club are at the moment exploring what they can do in terms of branding to make it kind of feel a little bit more like White Hart Lane. But obviously they're limited by UEFA regulations for Champions League. If you remember the Europa League ties at White Hart Lane and previously Champions League ones, the UEFA will kind of cover all our balconies and all our tiers in their own, you know, branding and whatever else. So we need to find out from UEFA what we're actually allowed to do. So that's one thing. The second thing is that I think Billy Joel has got a concert there on the Saturday. And whoever his organisers are, I'm going to say it's Live Nation, I'm not sure if it is, don't hand the stadium back to Wembley until Monday. And we play on Wednesday. So whatever the club can do is going to be a mad rush job, because they're really against the clock here. So they've been in negotiations, fairly hard negotiations, because it's their wish as well to try and make it feel as much like home as possible. The only way they can really do that, apart from selling us the seats and getting their own fans in there and putting their own team out on the pitch, is by using visuals. So flags and banners and surfers and whatever else, and that kind of thing. So they've been talking to Wembley in some detail about what they can actually do within that stadium. Wembley has some fairly strict regulations that are on their website, which have been causing some issues. But I think that they've now got to a position where the club at least know what they can do. So the club will be doing something for that Monaco game. I'm not at liberty to reveal what it is. That's their announcement and it will be going out. But there will be something that the club are doing officially. So that's there. Alongside that, and where we get involved, is we're big believers that the atmosphere should really come from grassroots fans. So it should be something that's organic, that's natural, that feels like it's embedded in a Tottenham tradition. So we've always been encouraging of fan groups who want to get off their arses and organise their own displays. So there's a bunch of lads who go under the Twitter handle of @TottenhamAMF, and they have been crowdfunding. They're trying to raise £1,000 to get 50 handheld waivers, which is basically flags on poles for everyone else. They're called waivers. And to get a large fixed banner to go on one of the tiers that says something like Tottenham from the Lane, or
We Are Tottenham from the Lane.
We Are Tottenham from the Lane. So that would stay up there, a bit like the fixed Bill Nicholson banner that we've got on Paxton. So we've been facilitating their negotiations with Wembley and the club. Hopefully they're getting somewhere. I mean, it has been a bit of a testing time. At first, we were told no poles over a metre. All had to be plastic. No flags over 2.5 metres, but we're, you know, beating them down. So we're quite hopeful they'll have some flexibility there to make that a little bit more workable for the lads.
Is that Wembley or the club?
That's Wembley, because Tottenham themselves are having to try and bend Wembley's rules to get their stuff in. But we'll obviously hark back to the glory days of the League Cup final against Chelsea, when I was there at 6 a.m. laying out 30,000 flags and our flags were pissing tiny. The Chelsea lot at the other end of the stadium had obviously got there earlier, obviously were more organised, obviously had flags that were at least three times the size. So that was slightly embarrassing. So the fact that Chelsea managed to get in 30,000 flags that were at least 2 metres, 2.5 metres on poles.
It's what robbing the mineral wealth exactly. of a nation will get you, though, isn't it?
Absolutely,
you know,
so. Right.
But it's also the pushback, isn't it, as well? And I think that that's where, you know, we hope to have a bit of an influence as well.
Yeah.
I think the most football clubs, I don't think it's just Spurs, will just say, OK, what can we do? And they'll be told what they can do, and they go, that's fine. If we say, well, actually, we're not that happy with that, because we've heard from our fans that they want to do something different, then it's our job to kind of gently, and sometimes not quite so gently, bang the club over the head and say, go back in and see if we can get us a better deal. And again, you know, we can't force them to do that. But I think we've got to the situation where they know that we want to do it for the right reasons. And actually, to give the club credit, they do want to create a decent atmosphere at the game. And part of the, you know, the ironic thing that went around the £30 away ticket price cap last year was that the argument that the fan groups used, and that in the end got the kind of purchase, if you like, with the Premier League and the football clubs, is that we said that, you know, we're part of this spectacle that you're selling. You know, passionate fans in stadiums, the interplay between home and away fans is what sells and gets you the money from the TV contracts, and you need to keep that going as well. So in a way, that kind of goes against the grain, because I don't like to think of myself as part of a product at all. I'm a football fan. I go and see my team. But, you know, we kind of played that game in order to get a decent deal for the fans. And I think the stuff with the atmosphere becomes the same. And I think, you know, Kat's point earlier is absolutely right, that it's trying to get that balance, that a lot of people kind of, well, you almost do the kind of it's health and safety gone mad gov, you know, why are there all these regulations? But the fact is that there are a lot more regulations, and you can't just kind of spray a bedsheet like you used to when I started going in the 70s and take it into a ground. Whether you like it or not, you can't do that. But equally, we don't want it to be this kind of completely corporate, organised, big waivers that they've got at Stamford Bridge.
No, I have already told the club that if they ever try to bring out those enormous flags behind their goal, that's just the end.
What people want in the end is that they want it, you know, we would prefer it to be completely spontaneous and unorganised. But the interesting thing about all this stuff is the stuff that looks really, really unorganised is actually really organised. And the thing that I suppose sparked it recently was Dortmund, wasn't it? Dortmund fans as last year. And people always bring up, well, how did they get in that anti-UEFA banner? Well, you know what? They used their ingenuity and they got it in, but I bet they didn't have an official discussion with the club and do a podcast about it. I think they probably just got on with it, didn't they, as well? So you draw your own conclusions from that, can't you?
I think at the same time as well, like if you consider the culture in somewhere like Germany,
of course,
these guys do this week in, week out. They're well-versed in, you know, how to...
Yes.
What might look like chaos probably is quite heavily organised as well.
It's choreographed.
Exactly.
You just look at the drum. I mean, you know, there's been a debate over the drum at Spurs for ages. But basically, the drum played one, maybe two things that the Germans, and it's almost like it's kind of, you know, the Prussian sort of marching movement history. But they had some tunes, didn't they? You know, what do you want to call it, tunes? But I mean, there's a lot of different beats, rhythms that were going on in that end. But they've also got people up in the front conducting it. Now, English fans don't want to do that, and that's not our thing.
I just get told to fuck off, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
really,
absolutely. Like, imagine.
Yeah.
So there's kind of different things. But that was an interesting argument, because people were saying we need a bit more of what Dortmund brought. But then people are saying, yeah, but then we've got our own culture as well. And it's like, well, yeah, we have, but we need to do something in order to generate that. And cool, you know, we're about singing, but, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with a bit of the visual side of it as well.
No, I think most towers culture has been completely diluted with the birth of the Premier League anyway. So it's about trying to get back to that, or maybe even find a new tradition. So
the only thing is, be careful. I don't know if you guys saw what happened in, I think it's in the Champions League qualifiers between two Bucharest clubs.
God.
Yes, yeah.
Steaua Bucharest, and I'm not sure who the other team is. I apologise.
That's right. The Tifo was for the other team, wasn't it?
Snuck in like one of those. So it'd be like the Arsenal fans masquerading as cleaners, going in, changing the Tifo so that when the Spurs fans hold it up, it says, you know, like, come on, you gooners, or something
that's
like
amazing.
That. It's essentially what they did. So, if we do have anything like that in store, please just make sure you give it a little look.
Fantastic.
We'd never do that. Can you imagine? That's so the sort of thing. Showpiece, game at Wembley.
Brilliant.
Spurs, and we hold up a big Arsenal flag or something.
Well, so I'm an argument, so I'm not a big Tifo fan anyway, so about other people tell me I'm a miserable git over there as well. So, but see, the funny thing about that is I remember there's an argument going on a few weeks ago, people saying, it's all this stuff is too organised. Look at what they do at Benfica. I said, yeah, it's funny how they did that Tifo. Well, they all turned up with a bit of card, and it just happened to make this massive picture. Totally randomly, you know.
All in the right place. You know. So Monaco's going to be... Are you going, Jack?
Yeah.
Monaco's going to be good. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a new experience for all of us. And, you know, the club have done well in designating a home end. although that sold out so quickly that it'll be mainly season ticket holders in that end. So everyone make some noise and let's just see where we get to, really. And if you've got flags, bring them, basically.
All right. Speaking of making noise.
Yeah.
There's a big new thing being built on the side of White Hart Lane, if anyone's missed it this season. How's it... new stadium, basically. I don't know why I've tried to introduce that.
Cedric, I thought you meant the new standalone toilet. Yeah. I don't know, I'm a bit stabby at the moment because I'm sat next to the hole, so it's not the best experience I've ever had at White Hart Lane.
No.
Getting wet at Palace and there's no roof. And they're giving us ponchos, though, apparently. So really? That'll be exciting.
Do you think they'll be little branded ponchos?
Well, I think they should have been called Ponchettinos and have Maurizio on the front. That's great. That's my bit of marketing cash.
You've wasted a golden tweet there.
Haven't I just, mate? Exactly.
Unless you've used it before.
We're due with the club on the 19th of September. That's our next set piece brought to board meeting. And that's when we'll have an update on the building work. The webcams are up and running now, so everyone who watches that kind of thing is probably as much abreast of it as we are. We haven't heard of any major delays. That's probably the most important thing, which is great. There was a planning app that went in to move the ticketing windows over to the Northern Terrace. That went in about a month or so ago, didn't it? But everything seems to be going according to plan, to be honest. But we'll get our next update on the 19th.
Dare I ask, safe standing?
Safe standing is an interesting one. What the club have said in the past is that... that their understanding of the legislation is that safe standing areas are not allowed. So obviously when they were going through the planning permission, they couldn't go for that. But what they've said to us is that the stadium design means that should the law change, they can change a section of the stadium to a safe standing section, and they would be willing to do that as well. Now there's discussion going on at the moment in the kind of wider national campaign on safe standing about exactly what the legislation means, and there's possibly that there's a slightly different approach that's being looked at, but there's kind of discussions going on with some of the government departments and the national supporters organisations about that, and the Premier League as well. So that may mean that we can do something a bit sooner, and I think our position as a trust is that it's something that fans obviously want. As soon as the club can do it, we want them to go ahead with it. I think probably, I don't know, you know, at risk of speaking for the club, if they're able to do something, which doesn't mean that they have to convert, but they can do it right from the start, it's got to be cheaper and more practical, and that's it.
Dare I say it, though, I do get the impression from the outside that the club aren't... Because there's been a few clubs that have come out and said they're all for safe standing, whereas with Spurs, I almost get the impression that, like, they'll go along with it, but they're not overly eager to push for it.
Donna gave us a really nice quote about 2 years ago now, that's on our website,
the executive director
at Tottenham Hotspur. They are pro. I think the issue's always been that they were concerned that the planning applications, you know, had to go through and had to go through smoothly. And anything that controversial, being, you know, sticking your head above the parapet and being the, you know, forerunner of a demand for it in the Premier League might rock a few boats. Now that's kind of gone, so we're looking for them to push things on. So, you know, we obviously talk to them about it a lot. So there's ongoing dialogue. Whether or not they'll take a public position immediately, I don't know.
I mean, the big issue is around, you know, I think a few fan groups said a few years ago that obviously the expectation is that tickets would be a bit cheaper as well, rather than charging. It's a premium experience as well. The model that's being looked at, and it's rail seating rather than safe standing. So, I mean, that's another thing to get out there actually as well, that it's not back to the terraces. And if you look at what they've got a parkhead at Celtic, that you're still going to have a numbered seat, but it's a rail seat which flips back, and then you've got everybody can stand up in that area as well. And again, you know, you can't go in or out of that area. That's kind of sectioned off at parkhead as well, isn't it? We know that. I think there's a few clubs going up to have a look at that and see what's going on as well.
I think you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Be aware that they've removed 4,000 seats from the northeast corner at White Hart Lane this season to sink that core into that side of the northeast part of White Hart Lane. What that had meant was that up to 1,800 season ticket holders who traditionally sit in Paxton Road, which for listeners who don't know is the family stand. So Paxton Road culturally is probably one of your more sedate stands at White Hart Lane. Let's put it that way. It's where you go to sit and watch and, you know, be engrossed in the game. They've moved them over to perhaps the loudest, most rowdy stand that we have, which is called the Park Lane, and they've moved them into the Park Lane lower. We have had more than just a few emails from disgruntled Paxton season ticket holders who are now dislocated and relocated in Park Lane lower, mainly around the fact that they don't want to stand throughout the entire game because there is a lot of standing that goes on in Park Lane lower. They can't see. You know, if they sit down, everyone else is standing around them. And what I think that's really drummed home to us, and hopefully has also drummed home to the club, is that safe standing, rail seating, a standing area, is not just about a choice to stand. It's about a choice for other people to sit. So I may not want to stand in a safe standing area. I might want to sit and watch the game. But by letting the people who want to stand in an area that's completely risk-free, which it isn't at the moment, you know, toppling over, you know, if you're all standing and the seats only come up to you, you know, calves or whatever, it gives other people the chance to sit down. So I think that's important. And hopefully that lesson is being learned as we talk at Tottenham now. I think it's fairly important point.
And I think on the, you know, obviously pricing is something we'll discuss with them when or if it gets to that stage as well. And because, you know, you obviously get more people in. I think the measure at the moment is you can get 1.5 fans in a rail seating area for every one fan as well. So you've got a bit of a chance to bring the prices down in that section, maintain their level of income, which they'll obviously be looking at doing overall in terms of paying off the stadium as well, but giving people the chance to go in there. And as Kat said, it's about the choice to stand and about the choice to sit as well.
And West Ham are really learning that at the moment.
Absolutely.
Because there's chaos over the Olympic Stadium.
It's a horror show.
But look, fans are actually punching each other and the stewards being, I think they had 40 assaults on stewards in two matches because of people wanting to stand and people wanting to sit.
It's basic. And it's West Ham.
Well, that's an interesting one for them because they spent, and their owners were quite clever because they spent a lot of time going, look, we've got one over on Spurs. What a great new stadium. Now they got into the stadium, they're starting to realise that maybe if they'd have had a supporters group, they were saying, well, actually, we're interested in our experience in there rather than getting one over on somebody else. It might have been a little bit better. I mean, what going back to the wider question of the stadium is that what is encouraging so far, and hopefully it's not famous last words, but the club seems to be looking at what's gone wrong with some of the other stadiums as well. So they've looked at some of the kind of soulless bowls and, you know, the issues with kind of, you know, standing and, you know, where you kind of put people and the fact that different stands have different personalities. And they seem to be trying to take that on board. So the fact that they're looking at this 17,000-seater at the moment home end, the fact that they said to the stadium designers, we want the stands to be close to the pitch, we want the fans to be close in as well. And every kind of discussion we're having with them, even down to some of the detail about how they're relocating a ticket office on the North Terrace and what they're going to be doing with that, they seem to be trying to say, we want this to be a unique stadium with a particular character. We want it to have a personality as well.
And they're doing their research. I mean, they're sending their staff around every blinking stadium in the globe, more or less, to do their research.
I guess just on a closing one on this one, just as a quick thing, do you know, have there been any conversations yet about the closing of White Hart Lane as it is now? Because we all saw the scenes at Upton Park when that went, taxi cabs going onto the pitch and all this kind of thing. Will there be much consultation from the club?
I think somebody on Twitter, and we had a kind of informal conversation, didn't we, with somebody at the club, somebody on Twitter said, look at what West Ham did and don't do that. And I think that message has been fairly firmly taken on board as well. The suggestion I quite liked, and you know, probably they won't go ahead with it, but somebody said just at the end of the last game, just turn the floodlights off and let it get quiet for it and let us do our own thing for about 15 minutes and remember it and sing.
We'll move on. We'll all move our seats before they sell them back to us for 60 quid in a box of
Dershowitz. Get your square of turf. They are going to mark it, but they know that it's easy to
think it's
up. People can say that.
I think it's important to stress that the club's mindset is probably very different from the fans' mindset on this as well, because the club's mindset is that we're not leaving. We're moving away for a season, maybe two, hopefully a season, and we're coming back. They don't see it as a departure because they're making the effort to build the stadium over the top of the existing stadium. And they've got a point. It's not like we're going to a completely new site and we're never going back to N17 again. But that's their mindset. Whereas as a fan, our mindset is we're saying goodbye to our beloved stadium. It doesn't matter that a new glossy, shiny one is going to be there in 18 months later down the line. It's still bye to White Hart Lane. So I think that's a piece of work that we need to do because that's where they are and that's where we are at the moment.
We're going to keep pushing that. And I mean, you know, it won't be made. We can't make it clearer. That's what I'm talking
about. No, we can't. We can't make it clearer.
To the club is just that the fans think, you know, our attitude is that's our stadium. It's something that we are going to be saying goodbye to. When something new, you know, grows up very, very close to it, it's still going to be different.
Yeah, exactly. But to answer your question, in the last few board-to-board meetings, Donna Cullen, the executive director, has referenced a committee that's in place to commemorate the final season at White Hart Lane and to commemorate the final game at White Hart Lane. So with great pleasure, I will revisit that on the 19th of September and find out what the plans are for the final season at White Hart Lane and the final game at White Hart Lane.
I guess just then, in closing, guys, because I'm not going to keep you too much longer, for all those who, you know, who may still be listening to this perfectly reasonable and rational and forthright account you've given of yourselves this evening, who still feel that, you know, you're not doing enough and, you know, who forget that you guys are volunteering your time to do this, so on and so forth, how can they get involved? All these people that feel they can do better, who
absolutely
have to take to Twitter with their ire and their venom, how can they get involved?
So, first of all, go to our website, which is www.thstofficial.com. On there, under the membership tab, it will take you through and show you how you can sign up. So become a member, first of all. You can become an associate member for absolutely nothing. It won't even cost you a biscuit, squat diddly. Or you can become a full member, which is £10 for adults a year or £5 for concessions. So if you are a full member, so you're paying us the £10 to sustain our organisation and keep us going, then you receive monthly newsletters, access to all our surveys, invites to our meetings and priority for about all the events that we organise as well, et cetera, et cetera. You also have the right to vote and to stand in an election. And we have a democratic election every February. So any full member can stick the name in the hat. They can stand for election, write a little manifesto, turn up to the AGM, and they can be voted in, basically, or not voted in, or they can vote us off if they don't like what we're doing. That's kind of how you get involved, really.
Yeah,
that's more or less it. And on Twitter, we're at THSTOfficial.
So that's where to send all the hate.
<by the way. laughs> Well, I mean, what we'll always try and do, I mean, you mentioned we're volunteers as well. You know, we don't do it for the thanks, but I think the one thing we would like people to realise is that if we don't get back to people straight away, and I think we've got a pretty good record of we get back to pretty much everybody at some stage as well, but we've got day jobs, we've got other things that we do, other commitments as well. We do it because we think it's important, because we think it matters, but also, you know, we're fans too, and we like going and have a beer with our mates and watching the game. So,
can't say
nothing special, really.
Good stuff.
All right, thanks so much, guys, and have a lovely evening.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you very much, Kat and Martin, for your lies, for your insidious lies. But yeah, honestly, jokes aside, don't give the trust any shit. They work really hard. So let's talk about transfers. Let's do that. I'm a bit concerned, mate. It seems to be going quite well. You know, at the start of the summer, we brought in Wanyama, a player who I've banged the drum for the past probably 3 years of us recording this. We finally got him, brought in another striker, but past few days, I mean, Bentaleb has been, is kind of, you know, that's been inevitable, hasn't it, for a while? And it's a shame to see him go, but we've gone over that. It's a shame to see him go, but whatever. He's obviously fallen out. His attitude, whatever, you know, we don't know.
It's not a talent-based move, is it?
No, it's not.
The club appear to have done what they have done for the right reasons, and you can't really argue with that as fans, because you as good as he is, you can't really go out of your way to keep somebody on board who doesn't appear to be pulling in the same direction as everyone else. And it doesn't seem to be a problem with him personally. It seems more of an issue with the people he surrounds himself with, which is the most disappointing thing. There are obvious comparisons to sort of Pogba in a slightly smaller sense. I don't expect us to be buying him back for a world record fee anytime soon. But there's what's his name as well? What's the one at Lazio? Ravel Morrison as well, which may be slightly more accurate, but I don't think he's as bad as that either. But it's just one of those where it's not worked out. It's gone a bit sour, and he's had to go elsewhere. I really do genuinely wish him the best, because I think he's
an
astronomical talent. And
there is a real talent there, isn't there?
Yeah, they've given him the number 10 shirt at Schalke, so I expect to see him playing fairly regularly and playing very well. So as long as they keep a smile on his face and, you know, pay him enough so that he can cut enough to the people that are surrounded him and sponging off him, then they won't have too big of an issue on him. But I reckon I sent out a tweet at the time that said, you know, I'll give it 18 months before they sell him for sort of 25 million, because I don't see him sticking around at Schalke for too long.
No, it's... I don't know. It's disappointing, but yeah, what more can we say on it than that? Chadley as well. Chadley's another to go. And I don't know. I'd be interested. What are your thoughts on that one, first of all, mate?
Oh, it's nice that the women of London are getting a rest, first and foremost. The women of the Midlands don't know what's hit them, both literally and metaphorically. But no, I wrote about it earlier when he was linked with Swansea. Earlier on in the window, and that seemed to make sense to me for around £10 million. Obviously we got 13 for him, which is brilliant, but for £10 million, it's sort of, he's at the stage now where he's theoretically entering his prime. He's been here for what, three, four seasons, so he's been here for a fair amount of time. He did incredibly well to recover from that first year where everyone thought he was a bit of a cheap joke, because he came for almost nothing from the Dutch league, and he made himself one of the more impressive sort of role players in the team, and sort of embraced his limited ability and skill set, and sort of accentuated that in the best possible way, and got a lot of goals and assists. But his playing time is going to be shortened with the fact that he's not a first choice anymore. He's going to be a substitute, or he's going to be a cup player, and fair play to him if he wants to go and get, you know, be a big player at a smaller team, because he's perfectly capable of doing that role. I think he's going to be one of West Brom's best players.
Definitely. He'll be massive. I think I can see him almost being a sort of Arnautovic type player for them.
Very much so.
I think he's really talented. I think, like you say, he seemed to come with a fairly limited skill set, but he looks to me like the type of player that's really worked his arse off to kind of get to where he has done. And
I think he gave an interview to 442 where he sort of discussed completely changing his diet and his training regime and everything like that. So he took it very seriously to sort of make a success of him at the club. And I wouldn't call that a failed transfer for either party, in terms of him coming to us, even though, you know, we had the strange occurrence of Tim Sherwood playing him as defensive midfielder and everything. He recovered from that really well. And, you know, he's, again, much like Bentaleb, you wish him all the best, because he's come, he's done a job, and nothing really happened that was untoward with him, on the field at least. And now he can go and make more of a success for himself elsewhere. I think this is sort of, I think we're going to have to come more to terms with this overturning player, and sort of when you have a player that isn't a world beater moving on after a couple of years as we get more successful at the club, because I think this is the type of transfer that happens more and more, because it's such a more ruthless place to be in the position we are now compared to where we used to be. We just can't afford to have them on the books for as long as we used to do.
Yeah, I do get that, and I definitely take that on board, and I can reconcile this move a lot more so if it's under the premise that essentially that Chadley has asked to go to be West Brom's main man and we've been decent about it, we've let him go. If it's not for that, if it's a, if it is a case of kind of trimming the fat, I don't get it. I don't get it, mate. I don't get letting Chadley go. A player to me who is a stronger portion of our kind of our squad, of our backup. I think he is. I think he's impactful off the bench. He does score goals and he does pop up with assists.
Yeah.
And unless we're replacing him, I do. It concerns me. It does.
Yeah.
And you know, I guess we're getting in Nkudu, which is probably going to happen. Again, you know, I know there's the argument about proven, unproven, so on and so forth, but still, I don't know. I like I say, I can get it. I'm not going to melt down. And I think it's the thing that's testament to Chadley's time. And I know this, again, this sounds ridiculous, but I think what's testament to Chadley's time with Spurs is when you actually see the reaction to his leaving on Twitter, there wasn't any good fuck off type things. It was mainly people being either wishing him the best or people kind of not being absolutely gutted and having a go at Spurs for letting him go, but just being a bit kind of like, well, that's a shame to see him go, really, because he's a decent player, you know? And I think that's it, right? That's the thing about Chadley is that you're not gonna lose sleep over letting him go, and I think you can have a legitimate level of concern about, you know, are we gonna replace him or not.
I think there are some fans that will probably get more sleep now that he's left the area.
Yeah, touche. but you know, he's not gonna probably make or break our season, but at the same time, it's nice to know that you've got ample backup. But I don't know, we'll see. One that's happened today, mate, the one that's really, to coin a popular phrase, hit me in the feels, it's Mr. Ryan Mason.
Yeah.
I wasn't overly encouraged with the talk of Mason going. I am a big fan of his, but I realised a certain inevitability about him going, but actually seeing it confirmed today, it really hit me, and I think I've got a lot of affinity for Mason.
Yeah.
But it was also like, it's almost like that little, our own class of 92, right? We're seeing the ones that have made the grade and the ones that haven't. And it's like that little golden dawn, that season we had, 14-15, when, you know, after we'd had all those, that miserable period under Sherwood, that indifferent time under AVB with a load of mercenaries, that we had that core of young players and there was that fledgling of hope. It felt like Spurs was kind of ours again, that it was coming back. And it was almost like seeing Mason go was like closing the door on that little bit, you know? Like with Bentaleb going as well, Mason on his way out.
Kane's the only one that's really left. I mean, the sentiment in which you've just spoken is the same that I used earlier when I wrote an article about Ryan Mason. I was in the middle of actually writing an article about Ryan Mason leaving, and then he left, so I had to do that really annoying thing of going back and having to bloody write it again, essentially, which, you know, wasn't fun. But, you know, it's not like it's a proper job. So I was writing about it in the same way, and I made exactly that point. There was that season just after Sherwood where the fan base was fractured, to be kind. There was sort of there wasn't too much hope with what Pochettino could do, because there was a slow start as well, so there was, you know, still a little bit of argument going on there, and it just wasn't a good time to be a Tottenham fan. But there was a band of Kane, Bentaleb, Mason and Andros Townsend that were sort of young players that had come through the academy, and with three of them being local as well, they helped bring the football club back together under Pochettino, and then more than anyone, because if you remember at the time we had the likes of Aaron Lennon and Adebayo, who were rumoured to not be entirely thrilled with the way in which Pochettino ran the club, and equally back from the manager to them, which is why they shifted on fairly quickly. And they were some of the first to really buy into completely what he wanted to do with the club. And I don't want to paste too much
credit on them, but I think there's a lot to be said for the fact that they were the first ones. They were, you know, the ones that helped open this door with Pochettino. The fact that Mason was, you know, such a good embodiment of what he wanted the team to do straight out of the bat. And even though we do have players like Eriksen and Lamela and Lloris and, you know, Alderweireld and Vertonghen, even these days, that are fantastic under Pochettino, there's still something extra special about, for rightly or wrongly, players that come through your own academy and on top of that are local. Because it's just as a fan, you always want to have that process yourself. And the fact that they've done it just makes it, I think, easier to relate to them as footballers and as people. And it's sad to see him go. I think that the last time we lost a player in this sort of similar manner was Michael Dawson, even more so than Aaron Lennon, perhaps, to the same club, funnily enough, sort of a Tottenham home in Hull, which I'm not sure they're too happy about having to live there, but, you know, they'll be all right, I guess. But, you know, it is definitely sad on a sentimental way. In a footballing sense, as you say, it makes complete and utter sense.
Yeah.
But as a football fan, to see that sort of a player go, it's always, you know, a tinge of sadness. It's very possible at exactly the same time to be, you know, to be smart enough to know that it was the right decision to make as a football club, and still at the same time have that tinge of sadness as a football fan. It's those two things aren't mutually exclusive.
He came in and stamped on Jack Wilshere as well. I mean, what more could you want than that?
Perfect Premier League debut.
Yeah, good lad. Let's do some questions. Let's have a look. We got Mark Lynch at Mark_Lynch1, who asks, am I the only one getting fed up with the continual slating of Eriksen, especially when others have been as bad?
I had a bit of a giggle when they said that he wanted 150 grand a week.
What, in the respect of never going to happen?
Just try to picture that conversation happening behind the doors at Tottenham. Laugh.
It would just be a case of 150 grand. No.
What's that for the month?
It, you know, it's not going to happen, is it? Just back to Mark's question. Yeah, I am pretty sick of the way Eriksen's been slated. However, what I would say, Mark, for the past three games,
he's not been very good.
He hasn't been very good. No, it's not just a case that he's been misplaced in your pass. It's more that I think the biggest omission from his game has been his pressing. His sort of effort levels have been pretty low. And I'm not going to speculate as to whether or not that's because of contract talks or whatever. Lad might be tired. He might just be having a shit few weeks.
It's not like he's been playing in the Euros or anything, so he's not
no, exactly.
Got an excuse. But
we don't know, you know. You don't know what's going on, but I expect him to kick on. So let's give him a break, because who are we going to replace him with at the moment?
Exactly.
That's the thing. You know, I think it's all well and good to kind of, you know, get annoyed with players like Eriksen, but I think the reality that we live in now at Spurs, and again, this is a point we always make, is that, all right, you want to get rid of Eriksen, but to replace a player of Eriksen's quality, you're going to have to spend Man City, / Chelsea, / Man United money, which we don't have. We don't have 60, like, we've been linked with Isco all the time. I don't even really want to go into that one, to be honest, because to me it's just hearsay, and, you know, if it happens, it happens. That would be great. But a player like Isco, you're looking at, you know, hundreds of thousands of pounds a week in wages. I mean, I might get completely mugged off, and I'm happy to if this deal does go through. But to me, you know, if we're not loaning him, if we're going to buy a player like Isco,
I can't see us buying him.
No, neither can I, because you're looking at 50, 60 million pounds. Look at James Rodriguez. Look at how much he cost.
I think I read that I think Juventus inquired for him previously, and they were quoted 50 million euros, which is something along the lines of 42, 43 million pounds.
We don't have that to chuck about at players. We just don't.
We probably do, but as a one-off payment, we probably do, especially to a club like Real Madrid. There is a scenario that you can imagine up where we go, here's 30 million for him, the rest of them, you know, those payments he still owes on Modric and Bale, just, you know, we'll call it quits. But I think as you say, the issue is wages. He's going to be coming from 150 easy at a club like Real Madrid, which is maybe their base wage. And I don't think he's going to be happy signing for 80 grand a week with us. So the only thing I can see, if it is going to happen, is a season-long loan where he gets to put himself in the market and play in the Champions League with us, and Real Madrid subsidises wages, because otherwise it's just not happening.
Maybe we'll see.
I will happily sort of, you know, be proven wrong for him joining.
Oh, Christ, yeah, come on.
I think it might put a fair few noses out of joint if he does join and gets paid 150 grand a week, because I think there'll be a queue at the manager and the chairman's door to get their deals bumped up.
And rightly so.
Yeah.
R Rose at R Rose 10 asks us, given the likely lack of squad depth post window, who is the player we'd miss the most if he got a lengthy injury? I'll say Dembele.
Yeah, the same. We've seen how difficult it's been without him already, and it'd get even worse if he's out for longer. So yeah, I was actually looking at this earlier because of sort of there are a few people wetting the bed over how many players we have on our books and how many we don't and how many we've sold and all that sort of a business. So you sort of first 11 picks itself, doesn't it? You've got Lloris, Walker, Alderweireld, Vertonghen, Rose, Dier, Dembele, Lamella, Ali, Eriksen, Kane. There's no questions about that. And then if you pick a second 11, that almost picks itself as well. So you Vorm, Trippier, Cameron Carter-Vickers, Kevin Vimmer, Ben Davies, Wanyama. And then there's a hole I've got next to Wanyama there where you can play sort of Winks or Carroll, but that's a position where if we were to be signing anybody, I'd want an extra player to a Dembele alternative, essentially, is what I'd want there. And then you've got Son, who doesn't appear to be anywhere at the moment. I've got a hole at number 10, because I think that's somewhere we need to strengthen as well, which is perhaps where the Isco rumours are coming from. Because although sort of the three that play behind Harry Kane are all number 10s in the first team, we've got nobody to really come in and deputise for them there. That's a natural. And then you've got, what's his name, Nakudu on the left wing, who I think, as we've been speaking, Jack has unofficially announced himself as a Tottenham player by posting a picture of Tadarus to do on his Twitter profile. So we'll see if he learns to. We've been laughing already, saying he's got pictures of himself in the training kit. So it's odd that it's not official yet. And then Jansen up front. So if we sign two more players, a number 10 and a Dembele alternative in central midfield, I don't think we're actually far off having a proper squad at all. I was speaking to you this earlier, but I think the size of the squad is comparable to how big the rest of the squads are in Europe at the biggest clubs. Nobody's really got a squad that's bigger than 25 man. Barcelona famously always have one that's sort of 22, 23 at the very most. And if you look at the amount of people that actually use their players throughout, it's never much more than that at all. So, you know, people might appear to have 30-man squads, but there's always a player in there that doesn't get a sniff of being at the pitch. So I'd rather have 23 players that are all as capable as playing as each other and almost having defined roles of, you know, your first choice in this position and this is our first team and these are the players knocking on the door, and then one or two youth players who, you know, in the sort of Marcus Edwards style, who are sort of just one small tier below that, who are knocking on the door looking for minutes elsewhere, than have, you know, a bigger squad of, you know, 26, 27, and have people like Chadley on the books who are sort of just going to sit there and not do anything, because that appears to be what his role had been reduced to. So there's always that. That's the flip side of the argument, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. I just want us to do all right this year, mate.
I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, I think we'll be fine. I think it's easy to melt down about it, right? It's easy to look at the squad size, to get worried about kind of who we're signing, who we haven't signed, who we've let go. But I think you also have to consider, you do have to take a bit of a deep breath and just look at our squad and be like, look, it's still fucking quality. We've still got some really, really good players there. We've got a hell of a lot of players that would walk into most other sides in the Premier League, including those who have spent ridiculous amounts of money this summer. And you have to take heart from that. We're still one of the better sides in the league. We are, categorically. We are. So, you know, have a bit of faith. Let's have a look. I don't think there's any more questions, really.
More footballing questions.
There's a few, but I can't really ask. Sorry, lads. We've already gone on for like an hour now. Let's have a look. Have you watched any Stranger Things yet, Raj?
I've not as yet. I've heard it's very good, but I've not watched it as yet. I'm slightly put off by people keep comparing it to stuff like E.T. and like early Spielberg and stuff like that. And
yeah, it's basically a homage to that. It's like a pastiche of these old things.
They're not films that I particularly enjoy. So
probably won't like it then.
Maybe I won't. That's why I've sort of strayed away a little bit more than I would have otherwise. But I've heard it's very good, so I'll give it a chance at least with an open mind. But
it is good, but I feel like it's something that like now it could be the victim of its own hype in the respect that like it's very good and it is very good. But I've seen people kind of talk about it like it's one of the best things ever, which is not. And because you know when expectations get raised so much and you watch something and it doesn't live up to that, I don't know. That's kind of what I feel like it might fall into. But it is great. It's
True Detective season 2 conundrum.
Potentially, yeah.
Which, if True Detective season 1 hadn't happened, season 2 would have been much better received, in my opinion.
Yeah. You know what? I didn't make it all the way through True Detective season 2.
Really? You give up?
No, I didn't give up. I guess I did give up in the respect that
I didn't finish it.
I didn't care enough to pursue it when I had loads of other stuff on. And I still haven't watched Narcos yet, and there's a series of that's going to come out. Mm. I've been keeping up with Ray Donovan. The Night Of, obviously, is something that I have found astounding, but I'll let you catch up with that before we go into that.
I'm a couple of weeks behind. I didn't really watch anything on holiday just because I was binging on weird American television. The best thing about American television, by the way, Jack, is their the adverts they have for medicine, because obviously they don't have an
so weird.
Yeah, there's this one for like, I can't remember what it was. I think it's like a headache tablet or something like this. It may have been something slightly more serious, but the advert sort of like this. It sounds like a joke when I explain it, but it wasn't. Like, it's got that really cheesy sort of stock sunny music in the background, and there's like a, you know how sort of always adverts are, where there's just people getting on with day-to-day things, and they're doing this voiceover where explaining they've got something wrong with them, but because they're doing this, they can get on with their day-to-day lives. And it's like, oh, if you take this, you know, medicine, then, you know, you'll be fine and you'll get away with your things, and, you know, and then suddenly it goes really silent, and that almost that comedy style, really quick but really stern voice comes on and goes, please consult your physician. Side effects can be like headaches and diarrhea, and then the last one is suicidal tendencies. And like the first time it happened, like we were sat around eating dinner, and I looked at my dad, and we just started pissing ourselves. And like the next time it came on, I was like, "Who's got an headache?" And goes, "You know what? I'll take these, but you know what? Maybe if I take them for too long, I might fancy topping myself." It just doesn't say. I'll take the headache. Cheers, mate.
I know, right? It's a bit of a bizarre. I guess it's maybe just because it's a place where everyone gets sued for everything, isn't it? So, but I guess no one's going to sue you if they kill themselves, are they? So.
Maybe the family can.
Yeah, true, actually.
Medical malpractice.
It's a bit worrying, though, isn't it? It's a bit bizarre.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that you wouldn't get on TV in England.
What films did you watch on the plane?
I didn't. I explained to you, I don't enjoy flying particularly, so I tend to sleep.
It's the best time for films, though, on a plane. Like, just stick one on. Stick it in your ears.
I listen to a lot of Miles Davis and slept is how I get through flights. Put on some big headphones, put my hoodie up, and take some pills and knock myself out for 8 hours.
I'd say this week, right, if you get the chance, go and watch War Dogs.
I was gonna, it's my birthday on Friday, so I wanted to go to the cinema during the day. I really want to see Cafe Society. Mm-hmm. I think my family would murder me if I'd made them go and sit through that. That's one of those films I'm going to have to go and watch with me, Todd.
Would you not want to watch that on a DVD, though? Woody Allen and Spit? I don't know if it's...
I'd quite enjoy watching how he shoots films on a bigger screen.
Fair play.
I think it's... maybe it's his first thing that he shot digitally as well, which is quite interesting.
It's Jesse Eisenberg, though, mate. I cannot... But do you not think Jesse... stand him.
Do you not think he's the almost perfect person to fill in as young Woody.
What a fucking miserable sociopath.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, perhaps, yeah, you got a good point there.
And there's, what's her name, Kristen Stewart in it as well, and Blake Lively and stuff, so it could be good, it could be good.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know your takes on War Dogs, though. I'd say this, I enjoyed it. I think it was a good film. I don't think
it's the guy who made The Hangover, isn't it? So
it is, yeah.
I've got a really soft spot for Jonah Hill and Miles Teller, actually. He looks really good in that new the boxing film that's coming up.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Miles Teller. He's a good actor.
Yeah, he seems like a bit of a knob, but he seems like he's I don't think I've ever been too disappointed in any one of his performances. He was obviously in that horrific Fantastic Four film that was I think the studio just destroyed. So didn't Josh Trank tweet about how he had a better version of the film that they weren't allowing him to release? So you know, if that's how studios work, I think. I did see, we went to cinema on our last night in America to see the new Bourne film, which is good.
I haven't seen that yet, annoying.
It's just, you know, Jason Bourne, mate. That's what it is. He does Bourne things.
I do like that. Like, Greengrass is good at that. Like, the way he shoots action films is incredible. It's basically like genre reinventing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it's really, really good. It's sort of as you wanted it. Alicia Vikander's in it, which means that there's some good acting going on. Julia Stiles and Tommy Lee Jones actually being half decent for the first time in ages, just because I think they asked him to be Tommy Lee Jones and sort of not stretch him too much, wear a suit and look a bit surly, and you've done your job, mate. Deliver your lines, which was, you know, welcome. It's not like him doing Men in Black or something where you can sort of watch him dying inside as he delivers the lines. He's sort of doing as he wants to, which is, you know, fair play to him.
There's a lot of quite a few good films coming out, actually.
It's getting to that time of year now, mate.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking for this. Hell or High Water is one coming out that looks particularly decent that I'm actually really looking forward to. Yeah, it may be good, it may not be, but, you know, we'll see.
Bridget Jones's Baby.
Yeah, of course, standard. Very much looking forward to that. There's another one as well with Alexander Skarsgård. It's directed. It's written and directed by the guy that... Fuck, what's his name? This is shocking. The guy that wrote and directed Calvary.
Oh, Martin McDonagh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. His
or is it the other McDonagh?
War on Everyone, that's it.
Yeah.
Because The Guard was brilliant. Calvary. Yes. If any of you... Basically, if you haven't seen The Guard and if you haven't seen Calvary, I'm not talking to you guys, I know you have, but... Anyone listening, you haven't seen The Guard and you haven't seen Calvary, watch
or In Bruges or something.
No,
like
In Bruges was by his brother. And
yeah, I know, but yeah, they're okay, essentially yeah. The same sort of thing.
Yeah.
If you didn't know there was two of them, they could be making... I don't understand why they don't just admit that it's sort of the same guy. You know, it's Martin McDonagh that did the other ones and John Michael that did those ones. Mm. They're both sort of playwrights and stuff as well, weren't they?
I mean, even Ned Kelly I didn't think was that terrible, to be honest, but it's, you know...
I really want to see what's the new film by the guy who did Whiplash, Damien Chazelle, La La Land. It's got Gosling and Emma Stone. If you want to get Raj Bains in a film, cast Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. I'll fucking turn up.
Also, in terms of animated films, Kubo and the Two Strings is supposed to be...
I thought you were going
to
say Sausage Party.
I'll probably watch out for the crap. Although there's been all those troubling things about the animation studio, the way they've treated their animators, so I kind of do have a bit of an ethical objection to it. They've just been really shitty not paying animators for their overtime, and then any animators that have complained about that, they've like scratched their names from the credits, so on and so forth, even though they've still done their work.
Hadn't they been working on it for like 10 years as well?
Yeah, exactly that. Like, it's a real kind of laboured, low-budget kind of project, I believe. And, yeah, they've really worked people to the bone and treated them like shit for it. So got a bit of an ethical objection to the film. But let's be honest, I'll still watch it. but, yeah, Kubo and the Two Strings is supposed to be spectacular. It's supposed to be just absolutely incredible. So
is it, what's it called? What's the... the guy who did like Princess Kaguya and stuff, is it one of those or is it somewhere else?
No, it's by the people that did Paranorman, I don't know if you ever saw.
No, I didn't see it, but I remember it.
Like the animation is very good. Like it's CGI, but it's almost made to look like it's stop motion animation. It's there's a very material feel to it, almost an imperfect type feel that you don't get from say like a Pixar film. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. I've seen some really, really good things about that. Also, want to see. I can't want to see Pete's Dragon as well. That's had some really good. Generally, it's had some really good write ups.
That sounds like a euphemism.
I know, right? It does. But yeah, do you not see the old? Do you ever see the old Disney one when you were a kid?
No, not. I think Pete's Dragon actually turned up on a parade, and me and my sister laughed and said that it was Puff the Magic Dragon, because neither of us had a clue who it was. Yeah, I was thinking about Studio Ghibli, by the way.
Oh yeah, they've disbanded, haven't they? They've gone.
Is it?
Oh. Yeah, they're done. Unfortunately. I saw Lights Out as well. That was.
Oh, they were playing adverts for that when I was in America. That looked fucking stupid. Like, did you watch? What's the film I told you to watch? The Vacation.
Oh no, you told me to watch the Visit.
The Visit, that's the one.
No, I got it though. I haven't gotten around to watching it yet. I saw the trailer and it looked brilliantly abysmal.
It's so, absolute dog shit.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm quite looking forward to that. I want to watch it.
It still makes me laugh thinking about it. So I do want you and anybody else in the world to please. I think somebody tweeted us and said they'd watched it and it was dog shit. So I take great pride from that.
I'll tell you what we'll do off air. We'll get our rosters in line and we'll make sure we've got a film or something to talk about next week properly that we can go into. So basically watch War Dogs, mate. Watch War Dogs.
And we can. All right.
If you do want to listen to any of the previous episodes of Rule the Roost podcast, you can do
I
so.
I wouldn't advise on listening to the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, come on. You know you would.
No, I did enjoy it. I listened to them just before I went to bed.
Wank bank.
Seb's wife does it to me. Yeah.
That's it. It's worse. And you see the effect he has on all the ladies of Bath. No, anyway.
It's tonight, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God, it is as well. Aubergine emoji, question mark. Listen to previous episodes of Rule the Roost on the Acast player, on iPlayer, or at...
What,
yeah,
BBC are doing
it
now, are they?
Fucking hell, iTunes. Booze, it's gone to my head, mate.
Oh, mate, Bake Off. We'll leave Bake Off for next week.
Okay, it was shite anyway, the first episode. Val can fuck off. That's my hot
Which
take.
One's Val? The old woman?
Oh, the wittering, I just dance and I do wacky thing. Oh, fuck off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm supporting the brown one, obviously, and Selassie. They're my two.
Selassie. Seems like
Selassie is definitely whopping that last that was on the other thing next to him.
100%.
Straight after the show, they have to stay in a hotel by that tent, and Selassie was knocking on that door at some early hour in the morning.
Just wearing an apron.
Yeah.
I've come to whisk your flower. I don't know.
It's time for the technical.
Yeah. good God.
I'm surprised there's not been a Bake Off porn yet.
Get ready for the cream filling.
Soggy bottom.
Oh, good God. What are we doing? Right, don't listen to any of this. Follow us at RTR.
Don't listen to any of this.
Follow us at RTR_pod. Come on, you Spurs.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.